What's up, everyone? It's Emmanuel, and you're listening to Crypto Testers, a new podcast focusing on consumer applications in the crypto industry.
In this second episode, I talk to Graham, who is head of UX at Argent, an Ethereum wallet that just recently raised $12 million for its mission to make Ethereum dApps accessible to anyone. Traditionally, in the crypto world, non-custodial wallets, where users are responsible for their funds, have been quite hard to use. Users had to remember a private key or seed phrase, and if they'd lose it, they'd risk losing all their funds. Argent has found a solution for this problem in the form of smart contract wallets. In this episode, we talk about what smart contract wallets are, about Argent, and about crypto UX in general. Hi, Graham.
Hello.
I'm really looking forward to talk about user experience in crypto, Argent, and crypto wallets in general with you. I think there are few people in the space who are better suited to have this conversation than you, as being the responsible for UX at Argent, which is, in my opinion, one of the best wallets out there, definitely. Before we jump into that topic, can you maybe talk a bit about who you are and how you got to join Argent?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the warm welcome and the flattering words. It's nice to have that kind of validation, really, because this space is, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we are working really hard to try and create the best experience. So when we hear people kind of confirming that we're on the right track, it's good to hear. So a bit about me. So I kind of have been doing stuff with digital for more than 20 years now, although I'm not that old. I started when I was 13, probably in the late 90s. I started designing and freelancing for a games company, a company called Vivendi Universal at the time, or Sierra Games. And then I started doing kind of freelance web projects and design and builds for little companies. And this was around the time when people were still asking whether it was necessary to have a website, which kind of seems a bit silly now. I mean, it's kind of funny because people are now asking, well, what is this crypto stuff? It's not really necessary. Is it going to go anywhere?
So you actually have a history of being in the nascent industries very early on. That's cool.
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, at 13, I didn't really have enough cash to kind of get involved in some of the buying shares and stocks like Amazon, all that sort of thing. Even though I was aware of Amazon and eBay at the time, using them, in fact. I think my eBay account's from 2000 or 2001 or something crazy, if that's even possible. And then I went to university, studying graphic design, and then kind of got out and started doing my first agency jobs. And so I was working in agencies and stuff for about 7 years. And then I moved to Moscow as the creative director for a company called Sapient, or Sapient Nitro at the time it was. And so I was the creative director for the Moscow office for Sapient. And it was in 2014 that the Russians invaded the east of Ukraine and Crimea. And all the sanctions kind of kicked off, and the Russian ruble collapsed. Whilst I was being paid in Russian rubles, I had a house and a mortgage back in the UK. And I had my first taste of kind of what money kind of shifting foreign exchange rates and money can actually feel like when it goes against you. And it was a bit scary. So I know that there are other stories in there in kind of the crypto space similar, but that was my first kind of taste of that. So within 6 months of moving out to Moscow, I had to come back and had to bring all my family back with me as well. And I at that point was in quite a kind of a, for all sorts of reasons, mainly because of all the stress of moving jobs, and I'd had a baby in that time as well. I was really, really super stressed. And I then got a job when I got back here working for the UK Tax Service, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, which is like the IRS for the United States, which I think probably more people are aware of.
Yeah.
And I just landed on my feet, actually, at HMRC. It was a really stable job, but I was going in as a consultant, as a UX consultant, and we had to design a system to protect transactions. So we were monitoring every transaction on the HMRC's web services and API services. So everything coming in from accountants, everything coming in through all the kind of tax returns, all of the repayment reclaims and all that sort of thing, with a view to catching cyber criminals. So it was, by the end of the service, I think we, by the end of the 3 years that I was there, we were kind of ingesting terabytes of data every day. And we, I think, had protected about £100 million from being stolen. So that kind of gives you a sense of the scale of what we'd achieved in about 3 years. But that kind of throughout that process, because I was then very much in A, into financial stuff, B, into tax, and C, into kind of transactions, you can understand, like, logically, it all fits perfectly with crypto. It's, you know, they're very analogous, even though it was tax and crypto was this sort of parallel world that was going on. I found myself really interested in crypto, partly because I was looking for people who were hiding money in the tax service, and crypto obviously came up as a way that people might be using to do that. And also because I became increasingly disillusioned really with the way that the civil service and the kind of the government was approaching tax and money and finance, and it just the kind of the excessive complexity of all of the different tax regimes, the inefficiencies and the lack of technological kind of understanding or competence within the service and within government, and that there needed to be a fundamental paradigm shift in money for things to start working the way that they should work. And that led me to Arjun, and I met Itamar, who's our CEO, through a friend. Itamar was had just started looking for people. They just raised their first the seed round, and they were looking for someone to look after the design. Kind of it just fit, basically. You know, I'd already bought some crypto at that point, so this is kind of mid 2017. I'd already kind of explored stuff. I got involved in a couple of ICOs, so yeah. I think for Itamar at the time, finding a designer with a kind of a financial background and someone who had been into crypto was quite kind of unusual.
Yeah, one thing, since you mentioned the funding round that happened very early on in Arjun's history, can you explain how that happened? For me, as an outsider, it really intrigued me when I saw that such a, you know, young company that hadn't even launched a product, I think, was able to raise money from investors like Crandom, who had invested in Spotify and other very famous companies. And I think Crandom had never invested in the crypto space before. So why did they invest in Argent? Is there a special story there?
It's quite a simple story. And really, it's, I mean, there's a couple of factors, really. One is the track record of the founding team. And the other is a bit of luck with timing, I think. So Itamar, who's our CEO, and Gerald, our CTO, they co-founded and successfully sold a company called Peak, which is a brain training app. And Peak has tens of millions of users. And it won App of the Year for both Google Play and App Store. So Itamar and Gerald's sort of track record on designing for apps and successfully exiting that startup, I think, meant that anyone investing could have had much more confidence in their ability to execute. And also Julian, who's our chief science officer, he successfully developed and sold his IP in quantum random number generation. So he's kind of, they're quite clever blokes, basically. Yeah. And have kind of a strong track record. And they were the three founders. And they've all known each other for years. They went to university together. They have a very, very strong, long-lasting relationship. So they came up with the idea for Argent and the kind of the core idea to remove all of the kind of the obvious friction points in crypto UX. And it coincided with the crypto boom at the end of 2017. So everyone was trying to get involved, and that's when they did their raise. And the timing and the team meant that I think they managed to convince some pretty high profile investors to take a risk on them. And it was, that's how it worked, basically.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's always easier to convince investors when you have a track record. That is a perfect kind of lead up to talk about exactly what it is that makes Argent so special. And maybe, yeah, you can walk us through the wallet and all its features.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So, Argent really was the initial ideas for any startup come through maybe a kind of a personal experience of some sort. You know, it's a mix of personal experience. I think Itamar had a similar experience, I think, where he sold Peak and he needed to be able to transfer the money out. I mean, he's better telling this story than I am, but he realized how difficult it was. And then he found crypto and he could just transfer the money in an instant. And that was like a light bulb moment. I know that that's kind of something that Itamar shared a few times. But then when you get into things like seed phrases and gas costs and, you know, writing stuff down on paper and all the addresses and having to check and double check the recipient address and all the kind of the stress of all of that. And he realized, and I think probably most of us in crypto have been through this, that actually that is never going to be something that most people are willing to go through. It's really only for people who are real pioneers and are willing to explore, that are willing to put up with 40 character addresses and seed phrases and all that sort of thing. And at the same time, we realized that the potential for crypto was incredible. And so Argent really was started to empower everyone to control and prosper from their digital assets and identity. That's kind of the summary. And then we want to do that as simply and safely and seamlessly as possible. And we started out by creating a smart wallet. And it's an Ethereum-specific wallet. And we decided to use a mobile wallet because really that's the, we believe that that's the way that all finance is going eventually. You know, I know there are quite a lot of people that are still doing their banking on desktop. And we feel that we wanted to put the power of Ethereum into the hands of anyone with a smartphone. That's the basics of how Argent started. And what makes Argent special is that you can do really everything that you'd expect from a bank, and actually even more, but without the bank. And that's what Ethereum enables. And with Argent, we've tried to create an experience which is as good as the best neo banks. I don't know, kind of, I'm not familiar with banks in Australia so much, but I know that you have, there are certainly banks in the UK and Europe like N26 and Monzo and Revolut. And we are really aiming for that kind of level of ease of use, but in a non-custodial way.
Yeah, you mentioned seed phrases and all of that. So that was the experience, or how the experience looked like before Argent started. And I guess you guys have introduced a new concept called smart wallets. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So taking seed phrases is one of the things that we've kind of got rid of. Seed phrases, I'm sure probably most of your listeners know what seed phrases are. Just to be clear, seed phrases, when you write down 12 or 24 words on a piece of paper and you use that to regenerate your wallet. And if anyone gets a hold of those seed phrases, they can access all of your funds and steal them. And if you lose your seed phrase, then your funds are gone forever. And really kind of seed phrases for us are just like more complex passwords that give someone access to something without any other layers of security. And we just see them as an anachronism. They're really kind of, they're something from a past world that don't make sense in the future. And yet they're used to secure almost every crypto wallet on the planet. So for us, getting rid of seed phrases was really important. We did that using smart contracts, which is why we call Argent a smart wallet, and Ethereum smart contracts specifically. And what we have replaced it with is this concept we call guardians. And guardians, a guardian is any other Ethereum address that you have chosen as the owner of your wallet to be allowed to performs certain security functions on your wallet. A guardian doesn't have access to your funds. So it's kind of, it's not the same as a multi-sig. And they do have the ability to help you recover your wallet if you lose it. And they have the ability to do things like approve transfers over your daily limit, which is another feature that we have, and to lock and unlock your wallet. So and the guardians always work in consensus. So if I have five guardians, then I would need three out of the five in order to do certain things on my wallet, for example. And the guardians, to give you an idea of, you know, what that actually means, you can use a Ledger as your guardian, like a Ledger hardware wallet. You can use MetaMask as a guardian. You can use a Trezor hardware wallet as a guardian. You can use another Argent wallet as a guardian. And Argent, we ourselves provide a guardian service, which is like a two-factor authentication service with your SMS and email. So, but technically any Ethereum address can be a guardian. And what we believe is that really seed phrases is, everyone talks about decentralization, but seed phrases is centralizing your risk, really, by putting your funds on a seed phrase and writing it down somewhere. You are placing all your risk, all your eggs in that one basket. And what we've done with guardians is really we've decentralized that risk, because you can then have three guardians, four guardians, which means that your risk is kind of, if one of the guardians is lost or someone dies, heaven forbid, you still have the ability to kind of recover. And it's different as well. You know, a few people have said, well, that's just Shamir secret sharing, isn't it? It's not the same as Shamir, because with Shamir, you do it once and then you're stuck with it. Whereas with guardians, the owner can change who their guardians are with a 24-hour time delay. So if removing a guardian takes 24 hours and adding a new guardian takes 24 hours at any point. So I can change who my guardians are. So that's another kind of really special feature, because it means that as my circumstances change, I can update my security to match my circumstances.
Yeah, I think that was really a big innovation in the space, because how many stories are there of people who have lost their seed phrases and incredible amounts of money with it? And now with Argent, you don't even know about your seed phrase, or you don't even know that you have a private key. Instead, you just sign up and you define some guardians. And in the case you lose your wallet, or sorry, your phone, you download Argent on your new phone, and Argent automatically sends like notifications to your guardians and asks them to kind of confirm who you are, and you recover all your funds who are in a smart contract on the chain. So that's really awesome. How is your experience with explaining this concept of guardians to users? And second question, do you have any insight on, you know, how many guardians like the typical user has? Like, do they just use this default setup with the Argent guardian, or do they actually, you know, ask some friends or other relatives to be a guardian?
Yep. Okay. Good question. So, can you remind me your first question again?
That's a good question. How was your experience explaining the concept of?
Oh yeah, explaining. Guardians? That's right. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. So explaining guardians. So yeah, the way we try to explain it, and when we get a chance to, we tend to talk about it as analogous to a bank. So with a bank, if you lose your phone and you have your banking app on there, or if you lose your card or it's stolen, you call your bank blocks the card, and then they'll send you a new one. And obviously a bank is a centralized entity, and really guardians perform essentially the same function, except that they are either people or other devices like your spare phone or a ledger that you trust. Which means that instead of having to trust a centralized institution like a bank, you can be very granular about who or what you trust. And otherwise, though, it really is the same thing. You know, the bank has daily limits, except you can set your own daily limit. So it means that you can limit who you send money to. So no one can drain your wallet, even if they get hold of your phone and crack it. which is even in itself kind of pretty unlikely. You can set trusted contact. So you know, once you set up a contact that you trust, you can send to and from that contact without any limits at all. So it really is all the same sort of things you'd expect from a bank, except without the bank. So that tends to be the way that we communicate to people. Now, I think when people just hear about Argent and they hear about no seed phrase, you know, certainly early on, the first kind of questions were, or the accusations were, well, you're decentralized. You know, it's not possible to remove seed phrases. How on earth could you do that? And I think we've at least within the Ethereum space now, we've kind of proven to most of the people in Ethereum that actually it is possible, and it's largely accepted that this is an option. Not everyone agrees with the options. Some people believe that a seed phrase is safer. We disagree. Actually, we really do disagree, because we think, as I said before, it's centralizing a risk, and also you don't have extra kind of protection like trusted contacts, the ability to lock your wallet, and the ability to have a daily limit as well, restrict how much money can leave your account in a day. So that's kind of the argument that we have. But interestingly, for people who aren't into crypto, whilst they're amazed that you can get rid of a bank, most of the people I speak to or have used Ardent as their first crypto wallet feel quite comfortable with that concept, with the idea of trusting certain people or other devices as the kind of the replacement for their bank. It's more people in crypto itself who already have mental models of what is and isn't good crypto security that sometimes challenge or feel that they disagree with the approach that Argent's taken. I think that's fine. I think over time, and once Argent is more and more battle tested, you know, it's been out now for a couple of years, and as the battle testing grows, I hope that people's confidence in Argent as well will grow. So onto your second question, what percentage of users use different guardians? I can't answer that question exactly. I haven't looked at the stats for a while. I do know though that the majority actually do just trust Argent as their default guardian. However, that's partly because the majority are still kind of exploring Argent. And once I think they start to trust it and use it more and they have significant funds, they then tend to diversify their guardians and add different guardians that are appropriate for them. So, which makes sense, you know, the more funds I have in something, the higher the security needs to be. So I think that's perfectly normal.
Yeah, and that whole concept of guardians is only made possible, as you mentioned briefly before, because this wallet is built on smart contracts on Ethereum, right, which are programmable, and so you can insert all that additional logic into those wallets, which is different from like these dumb accounts on Ethereum, which are, as you said, combined with seed phrases. And the smart contracts, they allow all sorts of other things, no? So making the wallet keyless is one aspect, but there are a couple of other things that make Argent special, which are also enabled by smart contracts. Can you talk about that?
Yes, so other than the seed phrases and the daily limits and all that sort of stuff, which by the way is all on chain, you know, it's not layer two, it's layer one. We also, because we're using smart contracts, we have the ability to orchestrate things like enabling ERC-20 tokens. When I go, for example, to use a decentralized app or DApp, and I want to interact with another token, let's say I'm interacting with, trying to think of one, DAI or USDC or something like that, an ERC-20 token. When I use a DApp, I need to first authorize that DApp to withdraw from my wallet. And so I have to pay a transaction fee and send a transaction in order to authorize a DApp. And then following that, I can then perform the transaction that I want. So there's always at least two steps to enable and to use a token on Ethereum. And one of the features of a smart contract wallet is that the smart contract wallet can orchestrate those two steps into one step for the end user. And if you think about something like opening a Maker CDP, there's actually a lot more than two steps involved. You know, you have to enable this token and enable that token, and then perform a transaction. I mean, I can't remember how many steps there are. You have to wrap it from ETH to PETH to wrap ETH to then pool the ETH, and there were all of these crazy steps involved. Certainly in the original CDPs, I think there may be 10 steps or something. And so one of the big innovations of a smart contract, well, particularly of Argent, is that for the end user, that process is just one click. Once you've sort of chosen all your settings, it's just one click as opposed to 10. And of course, only one block mine as well. So, you know, you wait maybe 15, 30 seconds, depending on congestion, as opposed to having to wait and then do the next step and then wait and then do the next step. Mm-hmm. So Argent really does make it feel way, way simpler. And I think a lot of people still haven't, the people that haven't tried Argent yet, because they don't realize, that they don't feel that they need to because they've got their setup or whatever, don't realize that it's not just about the seed phrase or, you know, all the free transactions, which, by the way, is another great feature of Argent. It's the ease of use. It's the actual not having to mess about with all of these steps and weights that you do in every other wallet. Argent kind of abstracts all of that. So that I think more than anything is going to be the kind of the pull for most people over time, especially as we start to integrate more dApps and stuff.
Yeah. So Maker CDP, for the listeners, that's basically enables users to put ETH into a loan contract and then receive DAI, which is a dollar stable coin, in return. And effectively it's sort of a loan, just that it's completely decentralized and it happens in an automated way on chain, and Argent makes that super easy. So that's basically a loan feature, and then you also have like a trading feature. What else?
Yeah, we have trading in app as well, and using decentralized exchange, and that we use Kyber for that, which is a decentralized exchange. We also have integrated Compound savings and also the DAI savings rate as well, and there are loads of more native integrations coming very, very soon, actually, which I'm not gonna say too much about because I don't know, we're looking for a big bang on that one. But we've had a lot of people asking for more decentralized finance DeFi integrations into the app, and we're responding with some very exciting things soon. So, and again, the using, say, something like Compound to save your crypto is super, super easy. You know, you just you choose the crypto you want to save, and you choose how much you want to save, and you just push one button and it's done, and you start earning interest again within about 15 seconds once the block's mined. So you don't have to kind of go through and enable and then send the money and then, you know, do this or that, or it really is just a simple interface. I think that over time, Argent will be by far the easiest way to use decentralized finance applications. And I hope that more people will at least come to Argent to try and experiment with it and just to see what it's like and be convinced, hopefully, that it's the better way.
I think this is a perfect transition to talk more about UX. I don't know if I've told you that, but Argent or the launch of Argent and a few other wallets like Zengo were actually the reason for me to start Crypto Testers, because I felt like there was such a huge gap between what people outside of crypto who had maybe used MetaMask or MyEther wallet in like 2017 and what they thought about crypto and what it actually looks like in 2010 and beyond with the arrival of Argent and others. And I think these improvements are mainly due to two reasons. I think the first, like you said, the like emergence of keyless wallets, so removing the need for users to store their private key. And secondly, the integrations of fiat on-ramps in wallets, allowing users to buy crypto within their wallet, and, you know, before they had to go to an exchange, buy some crypto there, then withdraw it to the Ethereum wallet, and only then they could start interacting with Ethereum dApps. And these two improvements coming together, that's when it sort of clicked for me, and I realized that the only way crypto would scale is through wallets. You know, like you said, wallets are not very different from bank accounts if they're nicely implemented. There was no way that people would use exchanges with lots of graphs and all that. And yeah, I think there's been a lot of progress in the space. What's your view on that? Where do you think we are in terms of UX in crypto today?
Yeah, before the interview, I think the question you asked me specifically was kind of what's the biggest challenge in current crypto UX? That's also an interesting question too. So, I mean, when a lot of people think of UX, they kind of tend to think of the obvious stuff that we interact with, like the user interface. And as you kind of hinted at, the UI is just, it's really just the final layer. It's the stuff underneath the interface that influences the experience. And UX problems that we see at the UI level are often symptoms of deeper issues. And things like crypto on and off ramp remain an issue. I think most of the UX challenges in crypto are because of the security models at the blockchain level in one way or another. So things like transaction fees and congestion, you know, that's the blockchain network security model that creates those. And things like seed phrases are obviously the individual security model. Unreadable addresses are also security because, you know, the address is 40 characters long because it's designed to have enough entropy for no two people to get the same address and one to take the other person's money. So I like to kind of compare creating UX in crypto to a bit like building a house. If you think of the foundations of a house, that's a bit like the security of the blockchain. And the rest of the house structure, the walls and the roof, need to be able to weather the elements, you know, whatever it throws at them. You know, being buffeted by the wind is like dealing with blockchain network congestion. And so foundational problems can have a really huge cost to the user experience. If the foundations or walls collapse, the whole house falls down. So I still think that the biggest challenge in crypto is scaling. Actually, that's kind of the fundamental problem that still has to be solved for any of this to work. When the network congests like it did on Black Thursday, which is, when was that? That was kind of early March. I mean, all hell breaks loose when it congests. So that still is that's when the foundations really start getting shaky. Thankfully, congestion issues are intermittent. And, you know, 90% of the time they don't affect the experience. Let's say we start really perfecting both the use cases, which I think we're increasingly doing. And when I say we, I mean the whole of particularly the DeFi system. As people become more convinced to move their money into DeFi for whatever reason, then congestion issues are going to become more obvious and more frequent. So I really do think that is so foundational that remains the greatest UX issue. And as I say, UX is not about just the UI, it's about the foundations as well. Everything that the UI is built on forms UX. And because it's finance as well, I mean, I don't know how often, again, this happens in Australia, for example, or anywhere or elsewhere in the world, but in the UK, occasionally we have situations where people's debit cards just stop working. And the bank systems go down, and then it's all over the news within minutes. So when it comes to Ethereum sort of looking to, or crypto generally looking to, create a parallel financial system, the foundations have to be very, very strong. And we can't be dealing with congestion once we really start getting up to large numbers of users. But once you get beyond that, I think it's probably the on and off ramp, at least in the short to medium term, people will still need to be able to get in and out of crypto for their daily use. I don't think micropayments are going to be solved for the next few years, probably. And so people will still need to be converting in some way to kind of usual fiat money in order to pay for stuff. However, I could see people moving as it becomes more trustworthy, people moving increasing amounts of their savings into cryptocurrency, a bit like you would do with a normal sort of savings account. So yeah, so once we get past really that foundation, I think then we start to look at introducing comfort. If you're going back to the analogy of a house, a concrete floor and bare walls, they may protect me. They're not great to live in though on their own. And I see kind of making me write down a seed phrase is like giving me a concrete floor for a bed, and making me read an unreadable address is like telling me to turn a light on by connecting two exposed wires together. Or making me set my own transaction fees is like leaving pipes exposed on the floor for me to trip over. You know, it's really, it's all the bare metal, the exposed inner workings of the blockchain that people are having to deal with. You know, think about a complete house, and we see abstraction everywhere. We see pipes. We don't see pipes. We don't see wires. We don't see the insulation. Walls are covered. Floors are boarded or carpeted. So good UX requires solid foundations, is absolutely prime, and then thoughtful abstraction, I think, on top of that. And then beyond that, we then get into kind of the difficulty with abstraction. Once you start getting to the level where Argent, for example, is, with really starting to look and feel like a modern banking app, the difficulty is you then lose, or your ability to discern is affected because the inner workings are hidden. You don't know necessarily what's going on underneath. And so on the surface, two very different crypto apps could seem identical, yet one of them is taking control of your money, and one of them is non-custodial. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting kind of problem, because on the one hand, at Argent, we're doing non-custodial and we're trying to do it right. And on the other hand, an exchange or something could offer a wallet which is custodial, plenty do, which means that at some point your money could get confiscated if things go really, really wrong. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, the question then is how do we kind of communicate the difference between that? And for us, non-custodial is absolutely foundational. It's absolutely critical to that. And then the difficulty is, how do we create a great user experience whilst remaining non-custodial? And that's a bit of a mantra at Argent, and that's why we chose Ethereum. You know, I love Bitcoin, and I think it has its place. But to do anything more with Bitcoin than store or send requires giving up custody to somebody else. Whereas with Ethereum, you can use smart contracts to do things like lending and borrowing and trading and earning without giving up custody. And really that remains for Argent a cornerstone of everything that we do. It has to be non-custodial.
I think as we are going forward, people are going to become smarter about these concepts. Like, nowadays, I think, yeah, only people who really care about crypto and a wallet being non-custodial will, you know, care enough about it to choose Argent over a centralized wallet if, you know, Argent is not better in other regards. But I think as crypto becomes, you know, or gets more into the mainstream, people will know what non-custodial is, and there will be more people choosing Argent for that reason, I think. Are there other projects that you personally, or Argent as a company, are kind of following and excited about in the Ethereum space that will elevate UX? And I guess like Ethereum 2.0 is definitely one of those projects, since going to sort of scaling problems that you mentioned, but maybe beyond that?
So I think for Argent, kind of my own interests aside, because I have interest in DeFi and what Argent's doing, and I also have other interests in crypto. I think in the immediate term, DeFi is super exciting, and that is Argent's primary focus. The good DeFi projects that are coming up now, Set Protocol's really interesting. Uniswap is an amazing project as well. and we're kind of keeping a close eye on other things that are happening in DeFi. Zero knowledge proofs and Starks in particular are very exciting as well. I think that the potential that they offer for scaling before even ETH2 is really interesting, and we're looking at kind of what's happening with zero knowledge proofs quite closely as well. And obviously ETH2, there's still sort of, for us, there's some questions around whether ETH1 will become a shard of ETH2, and you know what's going to happen with that. And you know, we're still kind of watching and waiting really to see you know, how we move on that. But yes, of course, ETH2 is exciting, and could I mean, I launch Ethereum into the stratosphere, I think, because if they get it right, then the kind of the questions will be answered. So, but me personally, in terms of kind of the other projects on in crypto in particular, is the opportunity for digital art. At first, I kind of found the idea of digital art a bit like, well, it's just a kind of a picture on my phone, right? But I kind of have a bit of an art collection, a little art collection of physical art myself, and I know a few artists. And I sort of started thinking about what gives value to art. And I realized really, I mean, it's provenance and authenticity that creates the value in art. Obviously the art itself and the artist itself have their own part to play in that. But the authenticity and provability of provenance of the kind of the chain of ownership or the history of a work of art is incredibly important to its value. And blockchain is perfect for that. And so in Ethereum in particular with Nifty tokens and that sort of thing. So I am very bullish on digital art. I think that I don't think it will replace physical art, but I think it could become an additional avenue, revenue stream for artists to leverage. I don't think most probably, if any artists that are kind of currently working in the physical sphere are really aware of the opportunity yet. Even some artists that do a lot of digital work, I don't think are fully aware of the opportunity in crypto art yet. And I think that is going to be a huge growth area over the next kind of 10 years probably as well. So I'm super excited about that.
Are there any projects around that, or like, is it very sort of just artists doing it? Or are there like marketplaces where there's a lot of activity?
Yes, I mean, there are marketplaces. There's the Blockchain Art Exchange, which is run by David Bailey's son, David Bailey being the very famous photographer. There's Mintbase. There are Crypto Voxels, which is like a 3D VR world, does kind of quite a lot of collaborations with art and crypto art and stuff. But a lot of the kind of stuff that's going on, I think, I mean, you do have some better known artists doing stuff, but a lot of it is people who are crypto natives or who are exploring crypto and happen to have a kind of a bit of an art hobby on the side doing things in crypto art. I think the real boom will come when some major artists, you know, I could see someone like Jeff Koons or someone like that, or Laura Zombie, better known artists, or maybe even Banksy or someone, starting to kind of subvert the idea or starting to play with the idea of collectibles on the blockchain. And once that happens, I think we'll see a huge surge of interest in the space as people start to understand why it's relevant and why it has a kind of a why it works, because of this kind of provability and provenance that you can get with blockchain, which you cannot do with any other digital art.
Yeah, and you mentioned VR. I haven't really gotten into VR myself, but I see that on Twitter more and more crypto people are, you know, sort of going on VR meetups and stuff. I like, without ever having tried it myself, I could imagine that crypto can become a thing there, you know, like as a new platform is created, I think there's more opportunity for crypto to become the predominant payment method, which is different from, you know, like e-commerce or something where there's so many like traditional payment providers like PayPal and stuff who have discovered that space for them already. So I can really imagine like a new platform like VR emerging and crypto becoming mainstream within that new space. But yeah, that's just my thoughts. Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to talk about with you, you mentioned that Argent integrates dApps natively, like Compound or MakerCDP, and that makes it much easier to use those dApps for the user. Instead of 10 clicks, they have like two taps in the Argent app to use it. And yeah, other wallets solve that differently. They have like this in-app browser where users can just navigate to any dApp website and then use that dApp. And admittedly, it's a very clunky user experience, but the users have the choice to use whatever dApp. In Argent, you, as we said, like you integrate them natively, so that puts like a natural cap as to how many of those dApps you can integrate. So how do you go about prioritizing which DeFi dApp to integrate? And do you think you could ever, there will ever be a time where you have to remove one because you want to integrate another? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you're right, I think at first, you know, we had our approach meant that there was a natural limit. I mean, just go back before I get into that, actually, let's go back to the dApp browser question, because that's a question that we get a lot. And the reason that we don't have a dApp browser in Argent is that we see dApp browsers a bit like, for people who can remember, CompuServe, which is really old, and AOL more recently, with these kind of walled gardens where everything was in a program. You access the internet and your email all in this one program, and you know that you didn't have to go outside of that to, you know, a separate browser or something like that. And now that approach for Web 2.0 feels really, really archaic. You know, locking people into a walled garden where they do certain things feels kind of pretty weird. And yet we're doing that with dApp browsers in crypto. So that's kind of where our resistance has come to it. Really, we don't feel like it's a long-term thing. So investing in that feels like the wrong move for us. And also we don't believe also that the experience provided by web-based dApps is in many cases as good as the experience that we could provide by natively integrating. So that's the decision that we've made. And yes, you're right, it does mean that we haven't made accessible as many dApps as you would be able to kind of get just by having a dApp browser. And until recently, we have had a bit of a hard limit on how many dApps we can integrate. Now, we've kind of rethought our architecture a little bit, and that means that we will be able to scale to many, many more dApps, actually, particularly DeFi dApps. So we've got something very exciting coming pretty soon, which will enable you to invest in many, many more protocols in DeFi within Argent natively. And I don't see, because of the way we've designed both the user interface, we've sort of standardized the interface between protocols, and because of the way we've standardized the integration approach, I don't see really there being any reason why there should be a hard limit on the protocols that we integrate in future. We should be able to respond very quickly to any kind of great new protocol that comes along. And then it's really just a question of our making a decision as to, you know, whether or not it's the right thing to do, whether the protocol is safe to integrate. You know, has the dApp had security audits? Is it battle tested? You know, who's the team behind it? Those sorts of questions will become the bottlenecks, not the speed of integration. So we're going to have a lot more headroom, I think, for integrating particularly DeFi dApps in future. When it comes to other dApps, then yes, I think there are other options. You know, Wallet Connect is currently our sort of solution. We have some other ideas about how we could improve that. I mean, Wallet Connect is working on mobile to mobile. So Wallet Connect is basically a tool which enables you to connect a mobile phone wallet, like Argent, to a desktop decentralized app. And they're working on currently adding the ability to go to a browser on your phone, hit a dApp, and connect to Wallet Connect and use a deep link to go back into a wallet like Argent. So that's that would mean then you could kind of use the same usual methods that you use today to explore the internet with a browser. And then if you want to make a payment or something, you could then deep link into Argent, make the payment, then go back to your browser. So we are working on these other solutions. That's our approach, really.
So users can currently either use dApps that are integrated natively in Argent, and if they want to use anything else, then they can connect their wallet with a desktop dApp through Wallet Connect by scanning a code, I believe, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. One thing that I wanted to ask you is, do you have a sort of defined persona or target user at Argent? And the reason I ask this is that I noticed that your fiat on-ramps are really tailored towards users in the US and Europe, whereas the features that you have in the apps, taking a loan and, you know, getting exposure to dollar stable coins and other features, are really more interesting for users outside of the EU and the US. So are you at all like focusing on emerging markets?
Oh, that's a good question. The our initial focus was definitely the US and Europe, mainly because of the scale of users in those spaces, although I totally accept that there are a lot of crypto users now outside of those two regions. We use two providers for our fiat on-ramp. One is Wire, and we use them mainly in the US, and the other is MoonPay. And I believe now that the support is more wide. So I think most people in most countries, or in a lot of countries, can use the fiat on-ramps. I admit that I haven't tried them. I haven't personally gone through the process, and I'd like to do a lot more usability testing and user research on what that process is like. So if anyone's listening to this and tries Argent and is in a country outside the US and the EU and would like to go through the process of buying crypto through Argent with me and let me observe or feedback, that would be wonderful, because as you say, it's different banking systems work very differently across the world, and it's not always easy to know how effective our solution is for the areas where we're not able to test. To go to your question about target users, though, I think right now our target users are really anyone who maybe bought Ether at any point, or an Ethereum token on an exchange and kept it there. So people who've been leaving their tokens on Coinbase or another exchange like Binance, and have been sort of hearing a little bit maybe about DeFi, or didn't realize that there's all this other stuff you can do, like earn interest on it. And have also heard, well, you shouldn't leave your coins in exchange, you know, not your keys, not your coins, these sorts of messages. But I've always been a bit like, I don't want to have to set up seed phrases, or I don't want to have to deal with this, or gas, or that sort of thing. You know, try Argent, because Argent is non-custodial. So they are your coins, and you can do all the things that you would want to do in DeFi with the ease of use of a normal banking app or of something else, so what you're used to. So I really hope that those people try Argent. That's kind of our target audience. Or maybe even people using other Ethereum wallets. There are loads of other wallets out there that are basic wallets, not smart wallets like Argent. And you've just, again, I'd love to see people just sending an ETH or something like that, or a few coins into Argent and just exploring it, just testing it, and to understand the difference that it is and that it offers. Multi-tap, dApp enabling and all that sort of messing about and stuff, and dApp browser and that sort of thing. So especially if they're into DeFi.
Yeah, I can only second that. I think everyone should try it. And once you try it, you never go back.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I really think they'll be amazed at the difference. Sure. Especially with the coming native DeFi integrations that I just mentioned. So I think it's going to be the easiest way to use some of the biggest protocols. And you know, what's cool about it is it's in the mobile phone, so you can have it in your wallet if you want to check your balance, or if you want to rebalance your portfolio or something like that. You know, you can do that in a couple of taps from your pocket, rather than having to get your laptop out. And I mean, then long term, I think that, you know, we really hope that Argent will be a wallet that is used by people who did not kind of get into crypto, did not buy Bitcoin in 2010, did not buy Ethereum in 2015. You know, people that have heard about it now were interested in it, maybe not even interested in investing in the underlying protocol coins like Bitcoin and Ethereum, but just want to get USDC and earn some interest on it, or want to be able to transfer a stable coin between countries easily. I would love Argent to be kind of a source for people to do that and to really start bringing more people into the world of crypto who would otherwise not have come in. I think actually we're seeing that already. You know, Argent has been probably one of the few wallets that's actually grown the crypto space to new people in the last kind of year or so. You know, there where people we've had some amazing people on Twitter saying, I wanted to share crypto with my family and friends, but until Argent came along, it was too complicated. There's no way. Everyone would just, the eyes would just go dark as I was talking about crypto. And now I can use Argent to, I've sent them some money, some DAI on Argent, $10 or something like that, and they can see it earning interest and they're inspired by what it offers. And I really hope that in the long term, we'll see a lot more of that as well. And Argent will become the go-to app for introducing people to this space for the first time.
I think that's a perfect ending to this podcast, being a bit over an hour. I feel like we could go on for another hour easily. There's so much to talk about. But thank you so much. And I wish you best of luck at Argent and see you soon.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great talking to you.